Hello, welcome to the Max Show. Yes, we're back. Apologies for last week, but I was at a funeral and I thought it was going to be over by the time we'd finished, but I was having such a good time, I didn't feel like I wanted to leave. It's the best funeral I've ever gone to. It was great. No black and everyone happy and celebrating. It was brilliant. Joining me, though, to discuss things far more somber than that, namely the Apple keynote and one fugly phone, I have to say, a great panel. We're still waiting on Adam. He might come, he might not. But joining us, top left, it's Black Headroom.
Wow.
Nice.
Wow.
That is awesome. That was great.
How you doing, brother?
Bruh, that is amazeballs. I need that backdrop. I'm going to use that. It's fantastic. I just had my follow-up. I started physical therapy next week. And hopefully I can walk like a normal human being without two pieces of aluminum in like a month or so.
Cool. And did you get up early enough to order anything today, or have you not ordered, or are you
I was really pretty much only going to order a watch because I'm holding out for the 10. But then I got the sort of the quote for physical therapy. So even the Apple TVs, and I mean, the watch is not happening yet.
Oh, okay. All right. Fair enough. Good point. Next to him, it's Adam, but he's not here. It's Patrice. How you doing, mate?
Doing good, doing good. Another crazy week, but I'm happy and I can't wait for the weekend to begin. I mean, it's already beginning, right?
Yeah, did you order?
At least for me. I ordered an Apple TV. That's about it, and that's probably it for this year. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, you're surprising me, mate, because I would have had you down to have emptied the bank account quite happily.
Yeah, I thought so too. But I mean, what Apple has announced and the prices and so on, I might change my mind, but I don't think so.
So there you go. That's a committed fanboy saying no orders. And one more committed fanboy who hasn't been on for a while. Welcome back, Mike T. Rose.
Thank you, Ewan. Glad to be back. And as to preempt your question, I have not ordered anything yet. I think like Doc, the watch is probably top of the list. Although an Apple TV, I just unplugged and I'm retiring my 720p hockey puck first gen iOS Apple TV. So it does need a 4K replacement, and that's probably on the list as well.
No, I mean, my kids are still using 720p hockey pucks in their rooms, and the reason being that if you told them 720p, they thought you were talking about £7.20. They don't know the difference. So Ellis is watching it on a 40-inch plasma and can't tell the difference between the 60-inch TV downstairs. So, you know, as long as I don't tell her, anyone who tells him that, you're in trouble. You'll get kicked.
You know, that's a great point. And actually, I have a 22-inch DVI HDMI monitor that would be a perfect fit for that 720p hockey puck. Yeah. It's impossible to keep track of the remote. That silver remote just slides between couch cushions like a knife through butter, and then you're always hunting for it. So,
right. So tough. So put stiff side Velcro on the back of it.
That's a good idea. Or like a tile, like zip tie a tile to it so I can make it beep whenever I need it. Yeah, I don't think the family would like that very much. But anyway, I'm excited for the 4K Apple TV.
Well, if you stick the hard side of the Velcro on, it slides less on surfaces, so it's less likely to slide off the arm and down the side of the sofa.
And yeah, also, and you stick can put to the receiver. In the
you can put the receiver on the book, and then you can marry the two together after you've watched it.
I like the way you're thinking.
Yeah, I've got two kids, mate. my two kids can get lost between their rooms and the breakfast table, so it's
they don't follow their noses, like the scent of sausages and muffins crullers doesn't bring
them. I got a 14-year-old son, mate. If he followed his nose, he'd be walking in circles.
Mike, they're bangers over there, not sausage.
Right. My apologies.
I you know what's funny is, and I hate when this happens to me because it rarely happens to me, but for my downstairs office, I just picked up the regular 64 gigabyte ATV4 at like August 20th. And I just picked it up for the simple reason that my lock after the latest upgrade was not working with the remote, you know, open and close without having a HomeKit device. So I really bought it specifically for a HomeKit hub, and I have a 4K TV mounted on the wall right over there above my laser. So it's like, man, I just bought this thing, and if I can find somebody to take it off of me for $100, I'll put the other $100 back and then get a 4K. But like, it's just super irritating that it's really a week too old to take it back. And, you know, now I got this thing. So I'll call my friends at the store and see if I can get somebody to pull a string for me. But it's not likely because, you know, it's just Apple TV.
So here's the other thing I've just thought of, because I've got a limited data connection down here. I've only got 500 gig for the month on the price plan that I'm playing at the new studio. If I put the 720 puck on the TV down here, surely I'd be pulling less data than if I put a 1080 on it.
Yeah, you should.
By quite a bit as well.
Yeah. Yeah,
most likely, yeah.
So that would be good. That would work out. There's the reason. Okay. So one of the kids, and we'll have to see who's good enough this month, they can get the old 1080 that's in the lounge. I can get the 4K for the lounge, and then one of their 720s can come down the office. There we go.
Problem solved.
That's called recycling as well. I should get credit for that on my environmental management policy.
Wow, you guys have those? I wish we had somebody that was smart enough to let us do things like that.
Think of the environment. Yeah, no, I didn't have.
We got to do it by ourselves because no one our side is listening to us.
I've got to say as well, my favorite Twitter account at the moment is Trump Draws, at Trump Draws. Just unbelievable. The fantastic, the video editing that they've done in that to get the perspectives right. There's no judder. It is absolutely seamless. And it, you know, every time he signs something, some official decree, he hands it up and shows everybody. And they've got loads of stuff that they just put superimpose on that. And it is absolutely brilliant. At Trump Draws. You've got to have a go at that. The week in Apple, nothing happened really much.
Buy it.
We had a keynote. We all talked about it. We all had a good snigger at Angela's cervix. But I'm sure that title's going to get us kicked off iTunes. Yeah. Angela's relaxed cervix. But she said it. That's what gets me. Loads of stuff happened. What do you want to do? Do you want to get the Craig Federighi face fail out of the way?
Why not?
Okay, face fail. Face fail gate.
And the funny thing is, I mean, honestly, naturally, everybody just took a chance to just blow that up. But you know what? We do the same thing when they have a fail at one of their keynotes. So. It's kind of to be expected. There is a bunch of things going on there that, you know, you would figure might happen to someone in real life. But I like the fact that, you know, they're smart enough to have a backup right away. No one talks about that. They just grabbed the other one and went straight to town. And the other, if you had both of them fail back to back, it's still in beta. People would still bitch. But I mean, first of all, A, it's beta, and B, like they had a backup, so
yeah. And well, it looked like it was actually just failing. It probably rebooted or something, and it was just asking for the passcode again because of that.
Yeah,
so it probably was running a beta and crashed or something.
So David Pogue got a statement from Apple. So I don't know if you guys saw this yesterday. Pogue got a statement from Apple which said what I will vouch for the fact that Kelly Guimont called this 100%, and we taped our show yesterday at noon Eastern, and Pogue's story came out in the afternoon. So unfortunately, I didn't get it up beforehand because it would have been amazing.
Yeah.
But the actual... Said. Sorry, go ahead, Ewan.
I said yes. Go ahead.
Oh. Yes. So the deal was, Kelly said, I think this is what happened. I think there were a lot of people, there were technicians, and there were folks prepping the demo, and there were a lot of people holding up that phone and looking into it and cleaning the screen and making sure it was connected, and none of those people were Craig. So it had been pin unlocked, a bunch of people held it up to their face, and it did exactly what it was supposed to do, which is that it pin locked again. Anybody who saw the screen of that phone recognized that UI. It's like, okay, we are no longer, the phone is no longer confident that you're you, whether it rebooted or it was idle for 6 hours or you tried to unlock it multiple times. And Kelly said, this is what I think happened. I think a bunch of people inadvertently held it to their face, which caused it to pinlock. What did Apple say? This is exactly what happened. A bunch of people were handling the phone. It pinlocked, completely what iOS is supposed to do. And the only, I mean, Federighi handled it fantastically. The only thing he did is he shouldn't have said out loud, switching to backup. He should have handled it.
If he grabbed the other phone, they might even notice.
They might not have even noticed. And that's the thing. Demo fail, sure. The demo had a hiccup. Technology fail? Face ID fail? Absolutely not. It behaved as designed. And especially considering this is prototype hardware and prototype software, it worked great. It actually did what it was supposed to do. But it's very hard to communicate that, even, by the way, to people who should know better. And Phil Elmer DeWitt at Apple 3.0 was like did a summary of all these face ID fail things. And I came back to him on Twitter and said, Phil, I am confident that this is behaving, that the phone itself operated properly, and this is just an optics question. He's like, I don't know. Apple came out and said that's exactly what happened.
You know, I have a thing that I was thinking about last night, and without sounding sexist or malicious, because it can happen to us too, but we all had that one bird in school who we thought was the bee's knees, and then or at work or whatever it is, and then one day you just happen to catch her at the Tesco with no makeup on.
You can't say bird.
Huh?
You can't say bird.
Okay, so don't say it then. We always know that one, whatever, female, whatever you want to call it. But it could be a person. It could be a dude, actually.
You misogynist.
But, you know, you see them when they're prepped. But then you see them at the Tesco or something when they're not prepped. And you don't even recognize them. And I myself have gotten in trouble for this because I didn't recognize the person. And they go, oh, you're not going to say hi? And I'm like, who are you? And they're like, oh man, Louise. Oh, man, I didn't recognize you. And that's because they choose to, for whatever reason, dress a different way or, you know, do the makeup a different way. So, like, how does it deal with, you know, face paint versus not face paint? Or even for me, like on November 1st, if I did Movember and shaved off all of my beard, like, will that throw the thing off? Will I have to pinlock it first and then go re-remind it what I look like now? Like, I'm just curious how that part would work.
It's supposed but I guess to learn. The pinlock I mean, is what it. The... What they've said is that it's supposed to learn your face over time. Also, keep in mind, it's not just looking at what your face looks like. It's also looking at the structure and the depth and the contour of your face, which is why you can't hold up an 8x10 glossy and fool it. So that's a good question, Doc, and I think we'll find out more as the phones get into people's hands. But just like there was a learning curve with Touch ID and people, you know, learned little tricks like make sure to register the same finger twice, so it's more likely to work when your hands are wet or when your skin is chapped. I think people will also learn, oh, I'm going to do a face ID, but I'm going to get it in different lighting, or I'm going to get it, you know, with the 5 o'clock shadow, and that way the model will be broader rather than really really narrow and confined, and more likely to say that's you're not you.
So that's pretty smart then, because that means, okay, like take a newscaster, for instance, right? They'll be in a situation where when you get contoured and stuff at work, like that's going to even make your cheekbones and everything look totally different from your normal cheekbones, right? So all they got to do is do one face ID with the makeup on and one with the makeup off, and then they're pretty squared away. Or for girls, it might be, you know, hair tied up a different way or, you know, not a different way, and that might work. But I got a lady who changes hair color like once a week. So,
but the thing is, you cannot do more than one face ID. That's something I think was confirmed by Apple during the demo. And the other thing is, I don't think it even matters because even with makeup on, the structure doesn't change.
Right. The structure of the doesn't change.
If you really take the depth and everything into account, it doesn't change.
So it's not really concerned about the colorations and things like that.
It's not about color. That's really awesome. About structure.
Yeah, I didn't have a chance to deep dive into the tech behind it yet, but now that makes a lot more sense.
So I've been doing the Uniku thing with Hoya, and I've made a film for them to show on Sunday at the launch. And one of the things I noticed in the footage that I shot of the Uniku machine working is that it actually sends out scattered patterns of dots to the face very fractionally before it sends out the flash to illuminate the face. I can guarantee, because you don't see those dots in real time, I can guarantee you it's the same technology that's being used in the phone it sends out a pattern of dots, and the elongation and shortening of those patterns of dots, the relative size of them. So if they were hitting a flat picture, they would all be the same size relative to the angle that they were sent.
Mm.
So depending on whatever angle you hold it at, left, right, or center, then with a still image, you'll get a consistent changing of the dots of the size and shape. Whereas when you point it at your face, you get humps and hollows, and that's what creates a 3D contour. And then it takes a picture. And that's what the technology here is doing. Most definitely it's sending out dots. It's not sending out just light.
Yeah. And what's also very interesting is that they are, I mean, Apple said that they also, trusted with masks. So really movie masks, and made sure that they don't work either. So it's also very interesting.
So you cannot pull an Arya Stark.
Yeah.
Or a Mission Impossible, Ethan Hunt. You can't do that either. Won't work. Yeah.
No. The only thing that makes me, although Ethan Hunt's masks are rather good, you have to say.
That's true.
How they do that is incredible. The only thing you'd have to say is that, but there is a question in my mind about, okay, if I start giving you loads of different scenarios of how I look, does that broaden the scope? Because, you know, we're at 1 in 1,000,000 for face scans duplication across the population. Do I reduce that scan ratio by giving more imprints and differentiations of my facial features to you?
It's a good question. I think, to your point, sorry, Patrice, to your point about the dot pattern. I mean, it is infrared. It's like the Kinect. Those aren't visible to the naked eye, but they're definitely going to pick up the depth information. That's essentially invariant unless you transform your weight dramatically. It's designed for different lighting conditions. So both, you know, for a bright outside sunshine, indoor lighting, dim lighting, there's already going to be some fudge in terms of the look of a person's face, but there has to be a certain confidence match. Otherwise the phone's not going to unlock. So I don't think it will be possible to train it to a point where it becomes indeterminate. I would love to see, and I'm looking forward to somebody doing this. I don't know who's going to do it, but somebody's going to get their hands on this and then test it with identical twins. And
it wouldn't work on twins.
They said it would not, or would?
They said it would not. They said it even wouldn't be fooled by twins.
No,
that was actually part of the demo.
No, they said watch your family members and make sure you remember you retain your passcode. They cautioned against family members, not for.
Mm-hmm.
I could have sworn I heard somewhere in the keynote where they mentioned that it even would, it even couldn't be fooled by twins.
Well, yeah, this whole thing of Spock and the evil twin.
Yeah, but
yes,
yeah
but identical twins aren't exactly identical anyway. There are differences in facial features, but they did issue a caution about family and told you to remember your passcode,
mm-hmm.
or make sure you keep your passcode secret.
Which is a good idea anyway, especially if your family includes, you know, criminal types like mine. I want to see, that's a live demo I would like to see. Like, I would like to see identical twin train the phone, hand it off to brother or sister, and see what happens.
It's going
to
happen.
I will try that.
That's a YouTube video on 20 second.
Yeah. Friend of mine, I will try that with her and her sister.
One of the things that I really liked about it is that they instantly answered the question about the sunglasses, because everybody, I think even we brought it up. I think everybody was like, well, what happens when you have your sunglasses on? And it's like, it's smart enough to work its way around sunglasses. And so that's cool. And I also think that everybody who's, you know, doing the poo-pooing or whatever is, especially, you know, if you're most of the tech writers understand, but I think some of the French people that still have loud access to the internet, we're all sort of poo-pooing the concept that, oh, what happens if it fails and you're in a hurry? Then just use the number. You know what I'm saying?
It's basically a repeat of all the stories. What was it 4 or 5 years ago with the introduction of Touch ID? Yeah. Same story.
I did see a tweet that said, so that means people have just got to look at your phone and then they can lock it forever. And no, you've got to touch the phone and look at it as well as. So it's no worse than if it's, oh, well, someone could touch my phone and lock it forever. Well, they could do that if they touched your home button. So it's not, there's no change in that whatsoever.
Yeah. But now certain people will be able to look at your phone and break it, which was always true before, but we just didn't talk about that.
It's funny. My feed is mostly filled up with these memes about guys sleeping and the girlfriends trying to hold the phone right above their face to get it unlocked. Yes. Because they definitely do it now. Like my friend, and I tease him so much about it because I told him he should just get another girlfriend. But his girlfriend puts the phone in his fingers when he's sleeping and then tries to check for any illicit stuff. And I'm like, she thinks you have more game than you actually do. I've gone out with you and I've watched you struck out millions of times until you found her. So I should just tell her stories of, you know, the past and maybe she'll leave you alone.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, look, it's optional. If you don't want to turn it on, use a PIN code. And if you have, you have a suspicious partner or people who are talking about amputating your fingers or replicating your face, maybe Face ID is not for you. Maybe go with the 8.
I've just got one more point to make, and again, this might be a bit of a non-issue, but I'm just going to say it anyway, is if people were using the phone, they were using it to help set up, and they would have looked at it, and then they would have put the passcode in to do their bit to set it up. And there's a bit of me thinking, hang on, if so many people have looked at it, and then it's gone off, if those people haven't looked at it and have not put a passcode in, then why are they touching it in the first place? Because there is the scenario of you've all got an iPhone at home, and then, you know, if the whole family has iPhones, rich family, admittedly, but you could say, oh, hang on, right, that looks like my phone. So I touch it. No, it's not mine. I touch it. No, it's not mine. And if three of you do that, you're into a 5-minute wait. So there is a certain part of me was sitting thinking, that doesn't ring totally true, because if people are touching that phone, they're touching it for a reason. Otherwise, they wouldn't let them near. It's like the space shuttle. You know, you walk underneath the space shuttle and you've seen a few journalists on the TV do this and they go, so this is the space shuttle, and they go, I want to touch it. And then the astronaut goes, well, why would you do that? Where's the positive in that for the astronaut that's stuck inside? There isn't any, so don't touch it. And the same thing would apply for this phone. If you're at that event and you're helping and you don't need to touch that phone, don't friggin' touch it. Yep. That's where I think that excuse falls down a little bit for me.
Well, I mean, having worked in event production, you have a lot of people that are going back and forth, particularly for mobile devices that are set up. You have to turn it on. You have to make sure it's fully charged. Mm-hmm. You have to test the video output. You have to test the networking. And again, Federighi is not standing up there. Like, he was there probably the day before and about 3 hours beforehand for rehearsals. And from that point forward, a stage manager or a technician is going to look at that phone multiple times. So I've been in the situation of having an iPad or an iPhone on a demo station and had other people interact with it for very justified reasons. In fact, about an hour after that happened in the keynote, I was doing a demo for 100 people in Pittsburgh, and my phone, the QuickTime mirroring for my phone, locked up. So I had to unplug it, plug it back in. And just like Federighi, I said, oh, well, hang on a second, I'm just going to fix this. I should have just not said anything and talked through it. But I have seen similar things happen plenty of times. I'm not suspicious, really, of the narrative. I just think the hard part is explaining to... I don't understand why it's so hard to explain to people who have witnessed this behavior with Touch ID on their own phones, whether they leave it on the shelf for 24 hours or they... You know, they use the wrong hand or the wrong finger and they get that PIN response back. I'm like, why is this so hard for people to get that this is something that iOS does as a matter of course?
Well, yeah, it's funny that comes up.
It's multiple things. One, it is definitely very, very unfortunate. I mean, Apple wants to prove that this method is better than Touch ID. It works better and all of that. And the first time they show it off, it doesn't work. That is definitely unfortunate. And I think the other part is it's just for those websites who want to have clicks, it's very convenient. It's something that you can complain about, something that you can create clickbaity articles about. It's just damn convenient to do that. Yeah. Whether it's right or not, doesn't matter.
I was going
to
say, Patrice, that was the nicest way I ever heard anybody say clickbait before, but then you backed it up and actually used the real term. So you're off the hook with that. I think the dumbest thing, and it's just kind of funny to me, but the guy who basically got this response when his question was, well, what if a thief takes my phone and points it at my face and then runs away? I was like, first of all, learn to fight, you wimp. Second of all, I don't think Yeah, I just think they would have figured stuff like that out. Like, you know what I mean? It just doesn't make any sense.
No, it's the same with the fingerprint. I mean, people will figure it out. It's no use. If you're I put it the other day, I put it very simply. I said, if you're concerned about privacy, if you're concerned about someone stealing your phone, if you're concerned at all about that, then use neither Touch ID nor Face ID. Use a passcode. Because either one will have issues.
Yeah, I think the passcode is easier to crack. I mean, if you got to do what the FBI did, you know, just sit there and just keep smashing at it until you eventually get in.
Well, you can't.
Because you can't.
You get, first, you get blocked, but secondly, you can use an arbitrarily long passphrase. You don't have to use a 6-digit or a 4-digit code.
And you can enable the erase feature, then it erases after 10 tries.
Right. Well, I use 6 because they made me on the last upgrade, but if it was up to me, I'd have still had it at 4. Because, I don't know, it's just one of those things, like, I don't know. Just people are paranoid for nothing. And I think most of it is they're not really paranoid. They're either looking for excuses or they're looking for clicks.
Exactly.
This is when you talk to someone about passcodes and they go, well, you know, 4's enough. What are the odds? 9,999 to 1. Damn, you're good. I'm going to big up Apple here because I did give them a good slagging a few weeks ago. Many of Apple's new products remain available for pre-order well after 1 minute past the hour. We were 8 o'clock. You guys would have been midnight, I guess. But there was people talking about iPhone 8 was remaining available up until 20 minutes afterwards. And the iPhone 3 didn't crap out until 2 hours afterwards, which, good on them. Well done, Apple. Or loads of people aren't buying your products because they're not buying the watch because their carrier's not covered. And they're not buying your 8 because they're waiting for the 10. So
yeah, it could be.
But there was no massive. Maybe the 10 is one of those things that they've done kind of semi deliberately. That, well, actually, we could end up stringing out the launch over 2. It goes there. So instead of everyone piling on the 8, we'll get half on the 8 and half on the 10, and then we'll spread the load on production as well.
Yeah, and less complaints.
I think another thing too that, I mean, as much as the banging happens in September every year, a lot of the uptick is in December and the Christmas, you know, the Christmas swash. You know what I mean? So, like, you're going to see the heavy orders on Black Friday and all the way up to about the second week of December. And that's sort of where they do their biggest push. I mean, if we had a graph, we'd probably see that. So, yeah, I think part of it is that. And this year, too, I mean, this is hard to say, but there's a bunch of people, like a huge chunk of the lower half of the states here, who would normally be possibly jumping into binary things, just got better shit on their mind right now. Like, they can't do it for whatever reason, or, you know, they're already dealing with, you know, loss of items and loss of home and, you know, being out of position and things like that. And we're talking a big swath of people. I mean, Just the Florida side, which was nowhere near as bad as the Texas side, took 6 million people out of electricity, you know, for the week. So you take that and you add it with Louisiana, Georgia, Texas, and sweeping your way up the side of the board. The Eastern Shore board is what the board is, by the way. You got to just realize that there's probably somewhere in ordinance of close to 100 million people that just can't even bother to look at this right now.
Yeah, or don't even have the money, even if they were bothered, because there's other things they have to think about.
I was including that in that statement.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, there's also people like me who their primary phone is a work phone, and they want to do some due diligence on how the watch, number sharing would actually work, if it would work on that plan. I mean, the watch is the one thing I would have bought this morning or last night if I was confident that I was going to be able to do the number sharing without making it very, very difficult for myself. Because that, to me, that is some Dick Tracy stuff. And I was talking about this to my wife about this, and I said, I can't wait to make phone calls on my watch. And she's like, but you could do that now. I was like, yeah, but I'm carrying the phone. Like, even if the person doesn't know that I've got my phone in my pocket that I'm talking to, I know it. And it's not the same. And she's like, yeah, you're a crazy person.
You dick.
And Deep Pan in the chat points out that the quote from Apple is, you can grip the buttons on both sides of the phone before you hand it over, which will temporarily disable Face ID, which is a great idea, unless you do it by accident. But we were talking about pre-orders and people being focused on restoring their homes as opposed to spending money on watches that talk.
My thought on coming back on the comment that you made there, Mike, about the watch. There was a bit on pricing that I haven't got in this. And one of the things I really didn't get on pricing was the number sharing bit from the ISPs, the cell providers, for the Apple, for the Zoom, the phone watch 3. Because it's like they're charging $10 a month for phone sharing. Yep. And you're like, hang on. What are you doing for that money? Because it's no different than another device being using you via tethering.
It's different than another device using it by tethering.
Educate
there's
me.
An L- there's an LTE chip in there. So it's much more like if you have a phone and you have an iPad and they both have cell service. So if you, today, if you do that, the iPad is $25 a month or more, depending on your data plan. It's a separate. It does have a separate phone number. You don't care what the phone number is, obviously, for your iPad, but it's there. It has a separate EMEI. It's a separate addressable device on the network, and it has its own plan. It seems chintzy, or it seems like, you know, penny pinching for the carriers to charge us $10 a month for the watch. But in fact, it is another. It's not a device that is tethering to your phone. It is the opposite of that. It is its own cell client. So, although when I was discussing this with Kelly yesterday, the first carrier to waive this based on the like how ample your cell phone plan is, like if you're paying more than $75 a month for your cell plan, you get the number share to your watch for free. Like if T-Mobile were to do that, they'd gain a lot of publicity and they probably wouldn't sacrifice much revenue. But yes, it is a separate device plan.
So So I'll take it on the chin that I'm wrong about that, and there is a separate device plan, and they are doing something for the money, but $120 a year for that. Come on,
I know.
That's just not okay.
Which carrier put that number up?
That was what they were charging.
$10 a month. I think that was mentioned either in the keynote
At first, I thought I heard it was not going to be different. It's the same number, same plan. But
it is the same phone number and the same plan. The question is what you pay the carrier to enable the feature.
Yeah, I think they didn't mention it in the keynote. I can't remember that, but I heard it definitely in some article somewhere afterwards. So probably the carriers announced their plans.
EE have got the connection here in the UK, and they're charging £5 allegedly for it per month. And I'm kind of still, it's
$10 a month.
No, it's not. Christ. No, five.
It's $10 million a month.
Yeah, it's a bajillion. £5 is nearly $5 now. So it's, you know, $6.50, I think. So it's not much at all. $6. So we're less than you, but there's still a charge there that I'm kind of finding it hard in my mind to justify that someone's going to do it for zero. You know, three network will do it and go up. You can have it for free, and then everyone's going to do it for free, I hope. Because I just think it's, you know, a data cap's a data cap. The amount of calls that you make, you're either making it on your phone or making it on your watch, so you're not making it on both. And all you're going to get from it, really, to a certain degree, is the ability to go out without your phone sometimes, whether you're doing exercise or if you're going out for a night on the tiles, which is a great idea. I mean, I love the idea of going out without my phone at night. Superb.
Yeah. I mean, there is a potential that you could use both at the same time. I mean, not for a phone call, but for data, definitely. I mean, you could, I don't know, you go out and your wife keeps your iPhone or something like that. That could happen.
Yeah.
But I still think, it's just too much.
That's just the carriers being douchey because it's unnecessary. Like dead serious. No one's going to sit on their phone, on their watch and have the same level and type of conversations they have with their phone. It's sort of an extra and handy thing, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, it's kind of like your boat in the backyard. It's not a real means of transportation. It's sort of a leisurely thing, right?
Yeah. So especially since the battery of the Apple Watch when you take a call only lasts an hour.
Right.
So maximum.
So
the whole idea
of charging an entire $10 for their maybe let's call even if you had 10 phone calls on your thing in a month. Like, well, that's just ridiculous. It's really ridiculous. Just stop.
Well, this is an interesting point that I didn't know. I'm looking at the Verge article now that says AT&T, T-Mobile, and Verizon have all officially said that Apple $10. Watch Series 3 support is $10. But what I didn't realize is that AT&T and T-Mobile have actually been doing this for a long time for other watches that support number sharing. So the $10 a month for number sharing is not a new price point, nor is it a new idea. It's just new to us because we've never had a watch that supported it before. Now, as we always know, when Apple enters a market, people look at do what we're doing, look at the cost structure, look at the value for money, and say, well, hold on a minute, does this even make sense? That's fine, and I agree with all of you that $10 a month is kind of excessive. But I want to just point out that it's not a new price point, and it's not a new approach to consumers. It's just the way it's been for a while.
So hang on, fellas. When I said, oh, $5 in the States, yeah, that's a difference. It's not much of a difference here. It's about, how much did I say in dollars? £5.
You said six.
Six and a half.
You said $6.
Yeah. Six and a half. So I've been corrected by Magic Man. It's £6.60.
$6.60.
You OCD, picky bastard. Get well and go back to work, for Christ's sake. Jesus, man. So let's go through them then. Apple TV. Who's excited about it? I was excited about it, I have to say. I thought that was one of the products that I thought I might buy, and I might buy the Watch 3 until I realized it didn't go with any carrier. But I haven't got a 4K TV at home, which bothers me. And I know HDR is the big thing in 4K TVs at the moment, which I couldn't give a stuff about HDR. I think it looks horrific.
Me too. Me neither.
But I get that. That's okay. I just thought the price was a little bit out. Because, you know, okay, you've added 4K to it, and okay, I gather there's better, innards in that. But I didn't see, you know, is there more memory? There's more chip. Okay, there's more graphics. They showed the game, and I was just, and I just thought, hang on, £30 extra a year later, or a year and a half later from the last one that you launched is too much.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the prices are in the US. I haven't really checked. Usually I do, but I didn't. But I mean, the prices are even weirder. I mean, one, they are too expensive.
It's $179 and $199 here in the US.
Yeah, and how is that compared to the old one? What did they sell those for?
What they're selling them now for is $149. I think that actually has not changed for the 32 gig. It's a while since I bought mine, so I don't remember though.
Okay, yeah, so it could simply be that we are getting...
I mean, $150 and $200.
Yep.
Okay, so it's a little bit more expensive.
Only on a small one, though. The top one is the same.
The higher memory one, so the 64 gig one is the same, and the 32 gig one is like
$10,
$10 or $20 more expensive.
Okay. Yeah. So it's for the most part only what we are paying here in Europe. That's crazy. That the price points I don't get. I mean, for twice the storage, you pay $20 more. What's the point?
Well, it's because they really don't want you to buy the lower one. And if you look at the difference in the phone memories, right? Even with the gap between $100 and whatever's, the smaller amount isn't economical for them either. So they actually save more money when they are, you know, selling the higher one. So they pass that on to the higher one. It also makes it a little bit more intriguing. I think it's just a matter of the price of the memory and things like that. Also, and I don't know this for sure, but back in the day, it used to be when you could get your 8 gigs on one chip, you had one price. But if your 8 gigs required you to put 2 4-gig chips in there in order to equal 8 gigs, you're spending more because you had two physical chips, you know? So it might even be something as simple as the higher configuration is simpler to build than the smaller configuration.
Yeah, I mean, I get that from an economic standpoint. I'm just questioning how they are, the marketing, the sale, how they are selling it. Because I mean, if you look at it, yeah, sure, they want people to go 64 gigs. But if the 32 gigs is only $20 less, then what's the point of even offering it? Why not just go all in and say, okay, 64 gigs, $199, done.
I agree. I think that the idea of sticking stuff in at the low price point just to try to shut people up on how expensive Apple is irritating. Yeah. Yes. It's the way that a lot of us felt when they first generated the One Series. I'm like, the One Series is for people too cheap to buy a Beamer. Like, why would you even do that? you know what I'm saying? But then it turned out that the One Series is a pretty badass car if you don't have any, you know, another person, you're by yourself kind of thing. And it made sense. But in this particular case, like, yeah, I just don't get it. I wish they would just make one device, call it a day, and drop that one by $10, just leave it at $89 and then, you know, split the difference.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's if the price difference was $50, $100, I would say, okay, they wanted to hit a lower price point just for optics. Fine. Mm-hmm. Most people will probably take the bigger one. Okay. But in this case, I mean, as you said, drop it by 10 and just sell one. It's less hassle for Apple, and it's just better. It's easier.
The Series 1 is great if you've got no friends and you're undateable. and I've just checked the 64 gig is a single chip, whereas the 32 gig, Doc, you're right, it's actually made up of 16 2 gig chips.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, I'm lying, Doc. Put your arms down, man.
Man, why you gotta do that?
What is keeping me from ordering one, the 64 gig 4K right now, is that the Amazon Prime Video support is not shipping yet for it, and Tim Cook said I think by the end of the year. And surprisingly enough, in my house, Amazon Prime has really ticked up in terms of where content is coming from. The Fire TV Stick. I've got a Fire TV
you're
Stick.
Funny, Mike. Fire TV. You're super funny. I love what you did right there. Because the hot new series is in Amazon is Tick right now. So the Amazon Prime users has ticked up. Well, that's a super story, Mr. Rose.
I did not do that on purpose. I apologize. Totally didn't.
Oh, man.
But I think that, I mean, my family is essentially trained itself to go Amazon first or default to Amazon because those are the Fire TVs have been the sort of front devices on more points of contact. Now, if I replace everything with Apple TVs, I say, we're going Apple TV. That's fine, and I'm sure they would be happy with it, but they're going to push back on me and say, where's the Amazon content? You know, where are the shows I want to watch? So I have to be, I would personally, I mean, I've got at this point, I've got the old Apple TV, the fourth gen Apple TV, I've got a Fire TV Stick, I've got a Fire TV 4K, I've got a TV that has its own streaming capability, and it happens to be a Chromecast, and I've got a separate Chromecast Ultra, and I've just like confused people into not knowing what to do when they want to watch TV. so I would be happy to just to standardize and just say, look, Apple TV is the way you get your content. I just need that last network to come online.
It's a good it's a good reverse psychology, isn't it? You want to spend more time together as a family. So all you do is buy a load of TV boxes and the kids go, oh, I can't be bothered. He wants to go to Monopoly.
Exactly.
That's a good strategy.
I'm going to go cook dinner. I'm going to go watch YouTube on my iPad and make chili.
I'm going to go and set fire to the derelict buildings. Right, let's do the iPhone then. iPhone 8, not an awful lot wrong with it. Just what you expected. Good upgrade. Solid looking device. Very happy. 240 frames a second at 1080p. Spot on, Apple. Well done. I liked it on the 7 Plus, though. Thank you very much for being it the one afterwards. But I'm not going to buy one because I'm sorry. I don't use half the crap I've got on my 7 Plus as it is. It does just...
Yeah, that's exactly my issue as well. It's just not worth for me. But I mean, we have a 7 Plus, so I don't think the upgrade is really for us usually.
Well, the wife's happy with this. You see, this is the thing, and this is where Adam would be great if he was on the show with me. It would be a solid purchase for me if the wife was bitching and moaning about a 6S, a 6 Plus, but she's not. She's happy with a 6 Plus, so she doesn't need my 7 Plus. So as long as she's not giving me earache for the 7 Plus, I got a hard time saying I'm going for an 8 Plus.
You know what? This is going to be a weird analogy, but this is what we're running into. And it's the maturation of the product cycle, but like, when we're younger, like the whole concept of it's only a little bit more to go supersize, and we would just supersize like religiously. Now when you get older and you realize that mess would kill you and you just don't even have the, say, the appetite for sweets or whatever, a lot of times you look at it like, I don't even care if it's a dollar more for this bonus thing. I'm not even going to add that. I just want it the way it is and call it a day. And so to put that in iPhone perspective, we're at the point where the amount of things that possibly can change from iteration to iteration is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. So although these are great features on a list, compared to what we're moving from, the great features itself isn't just the tick to make you want to move over. Man, the jazz hands looks weird. I just noticed the stream. Let me put that down.
Switching from
iteration to iteration is a little bit harder sell to even yourself. Even when you're trying to like, yo, I really, really need this, want this situation. So I can kind of understand that. I primarily want the 10 because of just what the camera has done alone. And even though I have, you know, all my A7s and whatnot, at this point in time, I still feel my little pocket photography studio is my number one camera. And for what I use it for, my phone, the things that I take with my camera has a lot to do with promotion and marketing for my business. I can actually justify it and not even trying to be pulled the douchey wool over the, you know, the old lady's eyes justification. Like, I really will get value out of what's going on with the camera for the fact that it helps me sell more stuff.
No, you won't.
Yeah. I mean, if you compare the, sorry.
You won't, because I mean, I'm a professional photographer and I use my phone out when I'm with customers. And I take pictures and I use those in videos and I use them in promotional stuff. And I say to them, okay, look, you know, this is going to be fine for social media. It's going to be fine to put out on maybe something up to about A4, but don't blow it any higher than that because it's just been shot on a phone. And they're like, wow, that was shot on a phone. Because I'm a decent photographer. I know what to point out, know what to focus on, know when to get good light and that kind of stuff and not get my phone out if I haven't got good light. That's not going to change for you, Doc, and you're not getting better resolution, you're not getting better pixel density, and you're not getting much better features. Okay, the lighting feature, maybe a little bit, but even that's a bit BS-y, I'm afraid, because it didn't look particularly natural in times on the camera.
No, it's the slow motion stuff. It's not the straight photography stuff. It's more the slow motion stuff.
Don't get me wrong, but it's still not good enough for me to want to spend £1,000 on it. That's my problem.
More than that.
It's just like, you know, it's not, I'm not getting anything from that. And I do this for a living, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that, but see, this is where I get mad when people start bitching about pricing. And I've said this a million times. I'll reiterate again, value proposition. My value proposition is different from your value proposition. It doesn't even have to do with, you know, spending the money or not spending the money. The value proposition of being able for me to take better slow-mo stuff, because when you go on my Instagram feed and you look at me doing slow motions or time lapse of me lasering things or CNCing things, it brings a lot of attraction and attention to my business. People say, oh, I saw this on Instagram. I get that on a phone call every day. How'd you find this? It's either Yelp or Instagram.
Okay.
And anymore, because a lot of it is Instagram, I'm willing to throw $1,000 at Instagram to turn around and make $7,000-$8,000.
But
you know what I'm saying?
No, but you're already getting those calls at 720p. So why do you think you're going to get more calls at 1080?
Would you stop that? Because the old lady might listen to this shit.
No one listens to this shit, mate. but anyway, getting on to the... go on, Patrice, go on.
No, I mean, I think Doc is right, and that's exactly my issue. I mean, I was dead set on upgrading the phone because I usually do, and because it's a business expense. I mean, it's the pulling the wool over your eyes thing. I mean, I usually do it. It's not that expensive for me. But this time around, I really looked at the price. I looked at what it's offering me, and I decided not to do it because simply it wasn't worth it for me. There were no, even, I mean, from a technical perspective, the iPhone 10 would be very intriguing for me as a developer to tinker with it, figure out what I can do with it, all of that. But it's not worth it. I mean, it simply is not, and that's why I said, okay, I'd rather visit Jerome on Hawaii than buy another iPhone. So.
Wait, Jerome lives across the street from me, but you're going to go visit Jerome, you German?
I will, Christmas.
Yeah, he doesn't want to come see. He's going to go and stay with Jerome for a week and never come over to your apartment.
Exactly.
Yeah. The whole time.
Screw that. Sophia's not going to let him stay in the house because she cries a lot at night.
I don't care.
Because she's married to Jerome.
No, that's his new baby.
His three months old now. It's not his wife then. That's okay.
Sherry would get drunk with Patrice because she can drink more than Jerome.
We've done iPhone. Yep. We've done iPhone 8. iPhone 10 is the fuggliest phone I've ever seen in my entire life. Not even Samsung would have made that crap.
I disagree, actually.
I like it.
I like the design.
You sheep. Go on then. Sorry. Sorry, did that come out as okay. well? I do apologize.
No, sorry. I mean, I really do. I like this. I like the design. I think it looks cool. But, you know, I mean, iPhone is pretty. It's always been pretty. I never really looked at it like, oh, I don't look at it the way I look at cars. Let's just put it that way. You know, to me, the phone is all about functionality and things like that. Like, I really don't care what it looks like per se. But it's like, there's all the functions there. Cool. I'm cool with that. It's not, to me, it doesn't have the same pull as a car. Now, if you ask Johnny or the way that they sell it, this is the most beautiful phone that they've ever made. And, you know, each successive one is the most beautiful one they ever made, which isn't true because I think the 3GS was the best looking of all the iPhones. It just didn't structurally survive irresponsible adults who don't know how to not break their stuff.
Do you know what happened? And this is I am absolutely convicted of my knowledge of this, in although I have no knowledge. They're having a design meeting. Johnny Ive's there, and he's actually strapped to the chair because he's getting so upset with the design of the iPhone 10. And he's going, yeah, but why do we need the bunny ears? Just draw a line across the top and make the whole lot black. Why are we going to have those stupid friggin' ears popping up? And Tim goes, Johnny, man, you've got to realize it's about the length. And those little stupid ears get us 0.3 of an inch on the statistic. So that's why we're doing it. And I bet you that's the only reason they've done those lug holes, because they are absolutely ugly as sin. And if Johnny Ive designed that and said it had to be there, and there wasn't a caveat about, well, it got us the 0.3 inches extra, I'm sorry, Johnny, but you've turned into a twat overnight.
I mean, that might actually be true, but I think, I mean, there's a very simple explanation for it. Apple set out to create a phone that was really, truly edge-to-edge screen. So it goes all the way up the top, all the way to the bottom.
It doesn't.
And left and right. Oh, it actually does. If you look
doesn't. There's a black There's a black border around it. It's nothing like the edge-to-edge of the Samsung 8. Tell me I'm wrong.
Well, okay. I mean, yeah, the Samsung 8. Yeah, okay. The Samsung 8 actually wraps around the edges even. So it's even more than that.
When I pick up my friend's Samsung 8, that going around the corner thing kind of weirds me out.
Yes, me too.
I personally don't like it.
Yeah.
I mean, but Samsung did it for what Ewan is saying. And then so Apple did it to basically catch up to that, but at the same token, not do the part that a lot of people complain about. And if you hear anybody complain about the 8, they have the same thing we have. It's just a weird impression of the way it does that. You know, so this is them getting closer to that without stepping into the curve around the outside part.
And I mean, the bunny ears are simply the result of that. I mean, it is a weird design decision, and I agree they could have simply had a bar up top, but I wouldn't have cared. But it's the sensors have to go somewhere, and that was the place. And it is definitely weird.
It looks weird, but I also think you have to look at the 10 as not even necessarily a collection, like a coherent design philosophy, but it's it is a technology platform, and it is painting the direction, painting the lines on the road for where iPhone is going, and more generally where Apple's philosophy of ambient computing and ambient device awareness is going. If we're looking at this 3 years from now, 4 years from now, of course those sensors are going to be part of the screen. You'll never know. You wouldn't know what part of the screen is the camera, or it'll be dead center and it'll be invisible behind the display. And everything will be part of the display. Today, in order to do the things they want to do functionally with that device, in order to do Face ID, in order to do an emoji, in order to do portrait lighting, in order to do, you know, there's how many sensors are in that little bar in the cutout? It's like 10. Looking at the diagram. There's all these things in there. So yeah, this is a trade-off between aesthetics and functionality, and it's very rare for Apple to actually make a trade-off between aesthetics and functionality. But in this case, it's like, look, in order for us to show you the future, we have to have this little, you know, thumbnail where we put all this stuff. In a couple years, it's all invisible. It all disappears. So it doesn't bother me per se.
So Mike just said it's not ready yet then.
It actually reminds me of the design of the first MacBook Air. I mean, remember, it had this weird door with the connections, and I mean, later on, it disappeared because it simply was weird.
Yeah, and like every time Apple goes whole hog in the direction of aesthetics over functionality, you get the G4 Cube, you get the 20th anniversary Macintosh, you get the eMate. And you get weird stuff, pardon me. And every time Apple goes whole hog in the direction of functional spec versus design and user experience, you get like the Performa 6600 or the Quadra 840 AV or the PC compatible, and you get these horrible, you know, Franken machines. I think in some regards, you always see the pendulum swinging between liberal arts and technology and that intersection that Steve used to talk about. Tim Cook is a supply chain guy at heart. He's like, what can I get? What can I get the OLED screens? Can I get these sensors? Can I get this all in a package, have it work, and ship it at a volumes, you know, in the tens or hundreds of millions a year? And if he can't answer yes to all those questions, he's not going to release the product. The design at some point has to play along with the supply chain. What can we get? What can we do with it? So you can argue the decision of drop the cutout, drop the ears, lose the spec. But this all at the end of the day comes down to what is the user experience? How excited are people going to be to get their hands on this phone? I don't think the mouse ears are going to change purchase decisions at the margin that are going to make this phone a success or not a success.
Okay, I am well aware of the fact that Steve Jobs did not want Apple to live on what would Steve do, totally, in the next statement I'm about to make. But tell me, would Steve Jobs have allowed the release of that phone in the way it currently looks?
We don't know.
We don't know.
No.
We have no way of knowing that.
I want you oh, Jesus Christ, boys.
He released some ugly oh, yes. stuff. Remember the hockey puck mouse? Come on. Like,
but at the time, it wasn't all ugly. Beautiful. At the time, it wasn't ugly. This is ugly now. That's my point. And in another few years, it'll be even uglier. It'll be the hockey puck mouse all over again. But
yeah, but I mean,
you know, when I asked you the question, would Steve Jobs have released? You can't go, we'll never know. I know that before I ask the sodding question. I want your perception, you morons.
I say, yeah, he would have released it.
Oh, liar.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I say, yeah, because I think Mike's right. And then two, I mean, I put this phone in the category of, like, you know, the Corvette to the Chevy line, or the Lexus, LFE or whatever the heck it, to the Lexus line, where you have the technology platform, it's their highest end performance thing. They always look a little bit weird, but they show all of the best stuff that the manufacturer knows how to do. And eventually all of the high-end features, the launch control and all of that, it works its way down to the family car. And eventually now all cars have anti-lock brakes. Back in the day, you only got that on the Corvette. None of the rest of the GMs had that, you know, because they were showing that the Corvette as their...
In the future, as their, all phones are going to have bunny ears. Are you sure, mate?
No, it's going to go the other way around. The bunny ears would disappear as soon as you can shoot all of that crap through the lens. I mean, through the screen. Right now, you can't shoot it through the screen 100% properly, so it has to be up there. But maybe two phones from now, or three, maybe, I give it three. It's a really hard thing what they're about to have to work their way into. You know, just the way lighting and all of that works in the multi layers, it will eventually go away. And if those 3 centimeters of lit bothers you, then duct tape them the F over and then make it straight again and then move on. I mean, like, yeah, get a case that covers it. invent a case that covers it. Yeah, invent a case that covers the bunny ears for the people that don't want to see the bunny ears, because the only thing that goes up there is status info anyway. So, yeah, I mean, if you want to see flat, then just make your own Ewan Rankin Belkin.
That's going to be that's going to be their new slogan, mate. They're going to get someone on TV and they're going to go, when stuff doesn't look right, duct tape.
Hey,
I thought the answer was
I know C4, guys that work at this one club over here, but do that every weekend.
This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2. They are awesome. I got the wrong logo up so you can know that the big show's coming at 8 o'clock. If you'd like to support them, then please do. They're absolutely awesome. They look after us. They give us all the server space and all the bandwidth for hosting the shows, and we'd be lost without them. So please, please, please check them out. BritishTechNetwork.com/UK2 or /sponsors if you want all of the deals. Uniku is happening this weekend. I have made a film for them to show at their launch event up, on Sunday. I'm attending the launch event and I'm speaking at it as well, apparently. And the film's okay. It's come out rather well. It's a great, great product. Wait till you see it in the UK. It will be in your local place soon, your local optician soon, I'm sure. There's plenty of people going to be there watching it launch. And it is a superb product. Technology at the cutting edge. Absolutely brilliant. We'll show you some pictures next week when we come back from the event. I'm going to take some stuff on the Monday when people are trying it out. And also, we've got another Spider 5 to give away. Darren Hendley won it last month. This month, the question that you've got is, don't say the answer, please, Doc, what are the primary colours of printing? There we go. All you've got to do is write in, send an email to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. Don't send it to another address because you won't get the prize. And you could win yourself a Spider 5 Express. Well worth having. And then we've got another one to give away next month. Isn't that amazing? Oh, we love them. Thanks for their support. They've been stunning. Right, here we go. Time for the cool thing. Would you like to start us off, Mike, in case you have to drop off?
I would be thrilled to. This is a cool thing that actually we talked about yesterday in the taping of the after show. So when I do edit that and get it up, you'll hear a slightly different version of it. But if you're familiar with the Impossible Project, this is the gang of crazy people who bought out and took over manufacturing Polaroid film, Polaroid instant film, after Polaroid went bankrupt and stopped manufacturing the film and the cameras. And for the past 9 years or so, they've been doing this thing called the Impossible Project, where they make the film for the older SX600 and the one-step cameras. They also make new versions of the film for their own cameras that they've built. It's kind of amazing that this Jurassic technology has gotten a new life. And just this week, they bought out the branding and the IP of Polaroid, of the Polaroid holding company, which had continued to own the trademark. So now Polaroid Originals on Twitter, on Instagram, on the web, us.polaroidoriginals.com, I think, is the domestic version, who's selling cameras, selling film. If you like the look of Polaroid, if you're a fan of that incredible instant film, instant photography technology, check it out. The new camera, I think the new iSeries camera 2 is $99. The film is expensive. It's like $15 for a color pack, but it's really not an experience you can replicate, pun not intended, any other way than this instant photography technology. So Polaroid Originals.
It's uk.polaroidoriginals.com if you're in the UK. So that's excellent. So US if you're in the US and UK if you're in the UK. They might do other nations as well. AU perhaps or something like that for Australia. Who knows? Or NZ for New Zealand. Good pick if you're into, I mean, what's the quality like on this? Has it improved since Polaroid did it?
I mean, it's the same chemistry. So you're going to get the same kind of experience and the same kind of visual quality of the Polaroid one steps. Obviously the lenses and sensors and everything else has improved along the way, so the light path is probably cleaner. Certainly, I actually have an older SX series camera that I got from my stepfather, where there's a light leak in the bellows, so all you get is sort of these ghost photographs. It's very creepy. But if you buy one of the newer cameras or their remanufactured cameras that they sell, you're going to get a great visual experience with it.
Color film for 600 is $17.99, and the standard roll of film for I-Type is $14.99. And the quality is exactly as it used to be, as I remember it, desaturated and slightly underexposed. Excellent. At least they're consistent.
They are.
Doc, what have you got for us, pal? Oh, you've adjusted your camera now, man. You've ruined me black headroom.
What did I do?
I don't know. Your camera's adjusted somehow. Just don't worry. I'll move it. You carry on. What's your cool thing, man?
Well, a couple weeks ago, I told you guys you should buy one of these.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So this was my sort of Behringer Etch Touch, which is really cool for doing stuff with Lightroom and Final Cut, whatever. And I got to where when I'm recording my podcast, like getting all of the adjustments on audio stuff sort of a pain in the butt. So I didn't have room for the giant version of this, which is sort of the eight channel fader version. So I got this. Let me move it that way.
The fader,
so this is the
port.
This is the fader port. There's a fader port 8, which is kind of big, and it takes up a lot of space on my desk. But my Focusrite over here has 8 ins and 8 outs and a bunch of, like, you know, special mix setup and whatever. And so when I'm using my podcast, I need to make adjustments to all these channels. There's going on screen to make those adjustments with the mouse is a little bit of a punk. So having something like this where we have the nice sort of flying fader action, and then, you know, I don't know if you'll be able to see this on the camera, but the fader can move itself up and down, you know what I mean, as I'm making adjustments on the screen.
With a with a floating head, there's none of that looks weird whatsoever.
Anyway.
A floating head and a fader that moves by itself.
The point of it is, in a situation where I'm trying to manage like 16 tracks, but I'm doing it, you know, by myself, and like, even something like this, as we're recording, you would want to be able to like make an adjustment on audio, but you can't necessarily reach the desk because you don't want to come off the camera. You could actually use the buttons here, change to the proper track, add a little bit of volume to Patrice, you know, take a little bit of volume away from, you know, say someone else, and, you know, work your EQ, whatever. You can do all of that from here without having to reach across and touch the desk. You know what I mean? Because it's running the software, and the software is linked to your desk, then it kind of covers the whole madness, and it's only $120. So it was relatively cheap for an automatic fader type thing. And just making adjustments in tactile versus trying to do it with the mouse is so different, especially if you have experience doing it the real way, doing it the tactile way before all of this technology crap came out. It's just way easier to manage a desk this way, because I'm pretty sure that you, and as well as I, were doing this before computers were all the business of it. So yeah, Fader Port 8 is made by PreSonus, and it's pretty rad.
You're all on a PreSonus audio card at the moment. FireWire audio card. Brilliant. Patrice, what have you got for us? Your link doesn't work, by the way.
My link doesn't work. Okay, awesome. The website is broken then.
Yeah, something wrong with
my... My pick is something that I don't have yet, but I'm incredibly excited about. It's the Ring Spotlight camera. It's something they announced at the end of July that, as I said, I haven't gotten my hands on it yet because I want to buy the battery version. They have three different versions of the same camera. It's one that is wired, just a standard plug, and that's it, and it connects over Wi-Fi. Other than that, it's just the power cord, basically. They have a battery version that is coming, and they have a solar version that is still coming. So they haven't shipped that yet, and they haven't even announced the prices for it yet. No, they have announced the prices, sorry. But it's an incredibly great camera, just a standard HomeKit compatible video camera, security camera for your backyard or something. It supports 1080p HD video. It has night vision. You get a live view, just like with your Ring doorbell. And it's just it's just a great looking, and because it's from the Ring. Or it's from Ring, sorry. I think it will be a great device. It's from the Ring.
It's from the Ring.
It will be a great device. I mean, all of their devices are great, and I'm really looking forward to buying one and then writing a review about it. So that's it.
Excellent.
7 days.
to what?
Oh yeah, no, so that's the ring.
Yeah, the ring. Yeah, okay.
That's the movie, The Ring.
My cool thing is the TP-Link smart plug. If you get the right shop on Amazon, they're only 20 quid at the moment. And I've got, my problem is I came down here with all my stuff, my Wemo stuff, which was dicey and dodgy when it was at the office in the first place. And when I moved down here, Zippo. Absolutely nothing at all. Couldn't get it to do. Went to default settings, restore everything. Nothing happened. Will not work at all. Can't get anything Wemo to set up again. So I'm going to have a chat with Amazon about that. So I just, out of frustration, bought the TP-Link stuff. It is brilliant. It is working. And this is one of those things like, you know, wow, well, it's brilliant the first week, but it'd be crap the second week. It hasn't. I've had it for 3 weeks now. It hasn't crapped out at all. And it's really good because it's completely compatible with your Amazon Echo. So I sit at the breakfast table and I tell the Amazon Echo to turn on the radiators in the studio, and it does it. And then I can sit at the studio and I can tell it to turn the lights on and off at home, which really pisses the wife off immensely, but it's good fun. Well, for me anyway. And it works. As long as you've got a unique identifier for a device, it doesn't matter where it is in the world, it will switch it on and off as long as it's enabled in your Alexa skill. And the other thing that Alexa gives it as well, which isn't in the Casa app, that goes with it, is it gives it grouping functionality as well. So I can put two radiators into radiators as a title, and I can put lamps into lounge lamps as a title, and it works perfectly. And they're only £20, which is 2.5 times less than the Wemos that are shit.
Yeah, do you have the HS100s or the 105s, the square one or the teardrop?
Yes, don't know.
I mean, it's easy. Just the shape of the way you plug it in a wall. One's a teardrop, one's a square.
It's an oval.
Okay, that's a teardrop. Okay, yeah.
It's not a teardrop shape. It's an oval, but there you go.
I understand.
It's behind me on the radiator, which isn't on.
I've got to run.
Where can we get a hold of you, Mike?
You can get a hold of me at Mike T. Rose on Twitter or at aftershowpodcast.com on the web, and the_aftershow. That is the show I do with the lovely and talented Kelly Grimont of the Mac Observer. And it is great to see you guys all. I hope I get to come back again soon.
We'll see you soon, definitely.
Take care.
Take care, mate. Doc, where can we get a hold of you, pal?
You can find me all over the interwebs at DOCROCK and on my podcast, The Solid Podcast, at solid.fm.
Okay. And Patrice, where are you?
Well, as always, here on the Mac Show every week on a couple of other podcasts like Deconstruct, the Mount Podcast, the Casual Kitchen Podcast, and everything I do on thepatrice.com.
Excellent, mate. Thanks very much. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at ewanrankin.com. We're going to be back for the big show at 8 o'clock. I've got a couple of hours to kill making some stuff up ready for the weekend at the Hoya conference. So that's going to be loads of fun. I'm really looking forward to that. And when I come back next week, I'll tell you all about the fun that we had at the Unique launch. It will be absolutely brilliant. Here again next Friday for the live show. Thanks very much for listening. Bye.